Welcome to Circuit Break from MacroFab, a weekly show about all things engineering, DIY projects, manufacturing, industry news, and recent MacroFab software releases. We're your hosts, electrical engineers Parker Dillman
and Stephen Craig.
This is episode 425, and this week we have Kyle McLeod, the Cloud. I even asked right before the podcast. And Nicholas Lundgaard.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks so much, Sean.
Yeah, we're excited to be here.
Good to be here.
Yeah. So Kyle is the OE project manager, and Nick is the OE team lead. So what is OE?
OE is order experience.
Not original equipment?
Not original equipment, although definitely did start out as OEM. Yeah.
Yeah, we are the order experience team. So that involves anyone uploading PCBs and placing orders.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, design file upload experience, the BOM population, part placements, all that good stuff, getting you to a quote and then placing the order, taking it in. We also have some pretty extensive interfacing with the order review team as well. So we manage the interface that MacroFabbers use to validate your part placements and other aspects of your design before we go ahead and process your order.
So you'd be safe to assume basically if anyone's using the MacroFab platform as a customer, y'all are the ones that...
Yes, that's absolutely right.
So what are y'all's email addresses so people can...
Product@macrofab.com. We really read that one. I like read all the comments you send there.
Yeah, and likewise... You know, if you get a customer care ticket that is complicated enough that our customer care team needs help, you will find me helping you out there.
So you actually do get to respond to customers?
No, not directly. I it's all filtered through Jerry.
Okay, yeah. So yeah. Customer Jerry filters y'all.
Yeah. Yep.
Jerry I respond every once in a while.
Yeah. Yep.
And hopped on chat for the first time the other day. Did some live chat with a customer.
Oh yeah. The what's that module called?
It's a live chat.
I think it's just called live chat.
It's called live chat.
Yeah.
There's actually like really good people on the other side of it though. It's one of the things I think people are probably skeptical of because you think you're getting someone like, you know, in another country or who knows who, but we're actually getting, you know, our support team who's very well versed in the MacroFab platform. And sometimes you're getting the product manager who will try to come in and help get your BOM ready.
So you guys are watching on the back end, I guess, of what people are doing and trying to sculpt the experience such that it's, what, as pleasant as possible in terms of ordering a board?
Yeah, we get a lot of, we set up a lot of tracking events. So we have events when people upload PCB files. You know, we don't always jump in and look at each one, but I try to look at, I don't know, 3 to 10 PCB uploads a day just to see what people are doing. And then... You know, we have data and metrics around, you know, how we're doing. I mean, really, are people able to get their design files from their EDA into our platform in a way that makes sense? Are they able to, you know, get their BOM components uploaded? Do we match them with market parts? Do we have those parts available? We're tracking all of that, you know, as a metric for our excellence of like, are we getting you like what you want, which is like you want to automatically price your PCB, like we want to deliver that as smoothly as possible. And so we track that at a, you know, big picture level of, you know, looking at metrics and then, you know, individual boards. I'll jump in just to see, because there's some nitty-gritty details sometimes. You know, someone says they can't get their components in through their ODB++ project. Okay, are those components in the component layers and we're just not grabbing them? Are they using, you know, some manufacturer MPN names that we're not extracting from? You can try to like troubleshoot that stuff to get as much of the data out and into our platform as possible.
Before we dive too much more back into that, I want to know more about y'all's backgrounds. What led up to y'all being on to this podcast? Because I know Nick was like, no, I'm never being on a podcast ever.
That is true.
Kyle was like, hell yeah, let's go. Like two opposite spectrums here.
Yeah, for sure. You're...
Yeah. So I have a mechanical engineering background. I started out as a design engineer and manufacturing engineer, but doing oil and gas drilling equipment. I did that for a few years and then decided I wanted to get into product management and tech. And so I went back to school for a couple of years to get my MBA, and then was at a software company that did insurance marketing, which, while not exciting, was a really, there's a lot of awesome data and marketing experience that I gained from that. And then got an opportunity to join Macrofab and saw it as an awesome opportunity to kind of combine that like passion I have for engineering and building things with some software experience and desire I had to like actually launch software products that, you know, while we don't build the cool stuff, like we help people build really cool products. And so that's what got me here. Yeah. And I'm on a podcast because I run the customer facing stuff. And I was like, anything to talk about, like what we do. And, you know, I help our customers get to see, you know, who we are and what we're passionate about. And, you know, that we like care and really want to help them get stuff built. I don't know. That's why I'm on.
Yeah. And Nicholas here. I went to, my background is in computer science. My grandfather actually worked at Los Alamos National Lab. He was a lab tech there for 30 years. And I got the opportunity to do an internship there when I was in college, but, wound up in actually oil and gas here in Houston. And then worked at Alert Logic, before Macrofab. I met Misha at a food event actually.
Misha's our CEO.
Yes, Misha is our CEO. That's right. So I met him, and he was, when he found out that I was a software developer, he basically started interviewing me at this restaurant that we were randomly placed together at, and ended up at Alert Logic for about 10 years. My background is very much microservices, functional programming languages, and just back-end systems. I'm very much like a systems person. I do love front-end user interfaces. I love to see them come together. I love to see them, how they're presenting our back-end work to users and giving value. But that is my background, my bread and butter for sure. And so I progressed to the role of technical leadership, and then met Dan Holm at Alert Logic, and he was looking for people here at Macrofab and kind of sold me on the experience. I don't have an electrical engineering background, don't know too much about PCBs, but it was super exciting to get the experience from Chris Church showing us showing us like how the manufacturing floor works, the process end to end, and the UI demo for how the platform works. So, yeah, I want to go build some stuff. I want to help people build stuff. So, yeah.
And how long have both of you been a part of Macrofab?
I'm coming up on 2 years.
Yeah, same here. It'll be 2 years in July.
Nice.
Do you need my answer, Stephen?
what are you sitting at now? You got to be over a decade now, right, Parker?
Yeah, actually. It's actually a year and a half. Macrofab would be 1/3 of my life.
Yikes.
Wow.
hey, technically next year is a decade for me.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
2015 is when I jumped on. So.
Yeah, this October will be 11 years of the company, because we had our 10th anniversary last fall.
Yeah.
And then basically another year and a half is I'll be like 38, and I'll be at the company for 13 years. So,
man,
you're crossing that third of your life. Can you have a middle age crisis and not, I guess that is middle age. when they consider middle age for people nowadays?
Isn't it 40s? Like 45, something like that.
But can you be middle age with a company? I guess I'm already way past that part.
Yeah. I don't know. You've been doing all the car crap for so long. You were middle aged in your like mid 20s.
I don't have a Corvette yet.
No, that's true. You just have a box truck that you're retrofitting.
Yeah. So I got Kyle and Nick on. Nick reluctantly wanted to get on this podcast. But basically talk about our software releases we did last year and then what's coming up next. So last year, I think, is probably a very impressive list of just releases that kind of went under the radar from a customer experience side. And so that's why I wanted y'all on to talk about those and showcase kind of like all the work we did. Because it's from a customer standpoint, the biggest one was like in 2018 where we released a new interface. And it mostly from last year, there's a lot of under the hood changes for the customers. And so, yeah, let's just rip through that list.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
Kyle can't see the list.
I was like,
yeah, what list?
He is correct. I had the list. I'm the only one that can see the list.
No, he's probably sitting there thinking, oh my gosh, I have to remember all of this, recall it all.
Yeah, I was like,
yeah. No. So one of the releases we had I'll just go through the whole list and then we can just start talking about them.
Okay.
We have improved design file uploads, completed board photo updates. I actually worked on that. A better part placement experience, customer furnished material options, intelligent overage logic. I guess that means it was dumb before. And then we have ITAR, which was the big one. Woo-hoo. And then PCB file view. So
yeah, I'll start with the ITAR compliance. That's one of our biggest ones.
Nick and I are actually wearing our ITAR shirts.
I know. Yeah, oh, yeah. You're wearing ITAR shirts. It feels weird looking at the videos, you guys. But yeah, ITAR compliance was a big effort by really everyone at MacroFab because that, you know, the customer sees is they see, you know, a really easy ITAR interface. Like you just click a box and, you know, it says ITAR, you know, ITAR PCB, ITAR order. And what goes on behind the scenes is a really impressive suite of like software tools that take that flag that you've checked and secure every touch point of your order from who gets to see your PCB files, like how, you know, what papers have ITAR markings on them. We had a consultant come in and we told him what we were doing and he's like, oh, this is like way over the top. In a sense, we didn't think it was over the top. We thought, you know, ITAR, we've got to lock this down. You know, and we have this software that already handles manufacturing. Let's just add it, you know, from the get-go and then, you know, flow that indicator through our whole system to lock all the you know, manufacturing touch points down as far as data protection goes. And so it's you know, it's one of those things that probably as a customer you like assume that every manufacturer does that, but you know, a lot of manufacturers have more paper oriented processes or, you know, are sending more things through email where there's, you know, either a higher risk that they're going to send it to the wrong person or send it to, you know, a group they're not supposed to, but also they're going to send it through a service that isn't ITAR locked down. Like they don't know about, you know, GovCloud. Like they're storing stuff on, you know, GovCloud secured ITAR servers. And so that was a really big effort that we undertook that we're really proud of because it's a really probably awesome ITAR offering that, you know, I think customers like, you know, won't necessarily see the like thoroughness of our ITAR compliance, but it is something that we're proud of and like to talk about. And then yeah, the PCB file uploads, that is kind of one of those things that's like part of ITAR is we need like we have these previously we just tried to you upload a PCB file, we want to process it and render a design from it, but there's a lot of stuff that's, you know, just not part of the Gerber files or BOM data, you know, that PDFs, you know, work instructions, stuff like that we want stored securely on the platform and attached to our PCB. And we had places for that, but we exposed it to our customers this year and want to expand that as an offering of, you know, we understand that there are designs that, you know, aren't just simple PCBA and we want to be able to support that and handle it as best as possible. And, you know, part of that is just getting those files on our platform where they have traceability and you know, good history and are attached to PCBs. Nicholas, do you want to talk about the, you know, upload enhancements we did?
Yeah, sure. Another brief point to call home, like how much effort engineering put into, well, software development put into the ITAR effort. In October of last year, we migrated our entire platform from commercial AWS into GovCloud, every single piece of it. And that was done with a very, you know, very brief amount of downtime, but it was done quite seamlessly. It was a joy to be a part of that. It was impressive to see my colleagues working diligently on that. There was so much preparation that went into making sure that every detail of that migration would go as planned with practicing and all of that. And the team
Did you guys do that at 7 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday or something like that?
We did start on a Saturday night, just went through the night and was completed by the next afternoon. That's right. In Saturday afternoon.
Do we have any stats on, did anyone actually hit the outage? So, we publicly announced that we had an outage and then like,
yeah.
Yeah, we did. We definitely had a redirect to a page. I don't know that we have stats on how many visits we had visiting the.
I want to upload my PCB page. Now.
I was about to say that there's like someone who's, I need 10 million PCBs right now at Saturday at midnight. And they're like, oh, damn it.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it was like so short that we didn't even bother like looking to see.
sure, yeah, nine. Yeah.
Yeah, because it was
which is
for...
ideal. That's exactly how you want.
Yeah, it was just I have, you know, all the emails like drafted of we're sorry, like it's taking longer, but luckily I didn't have to send any of those.
One very distinct memory I have working back at Macrofab was being in the Hutchins location, and we there was a, I'm doing air quotes, conference room in there. it was this one room that was just like table and chairs in it. And I remember being part of the move of going from Hutchins over to Governor Street and having Chris Church look at everyone and go, and he said very clearly, we're doing this with military precision in terms of how we're moving all of this stuff over. And it's still etched in my memory. I can recall that. And so I can only imagine Chris doing the exact same thing with, we're going to, you know, switch all of the servers over to GovCloud with military precision.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the entire team pitched in on preparing us for that, doing extensive testing. I definitely have to call out Isaac and Tim on our infrastructure team. They just the amount of work that they did to make sure that process went smoothly was astonishing.
And I gotta think, you know, a standard CM doesn't necessarily have the same platform that you guys do that handles all the file and all the data transfer with everything. So you know, having an ITAR, in my experience with working with ITAR regulated circuit boards has been frankly not terribly difficult. We encrypt the files, we send passwords, we get a way to get the files over to the CM, and then we're like, okay, there you go, it's in your hands, kind of thing. But with you guys having the platform, it seems infinitely more difficult to, you know, cross all the T's and dot all the I's in terms of who's checking everything and making sure that everything is done properly. So I'm saying is it's very impressive.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess moving back to file uploads, yeah, I think one of the themes last year, in addition to just, you know, improving, you know, adding a new ability to upload non-design files has been just improving the reliability of our Gerber processing. We've done some significant speed enhancements to Gerber processing, you know, by adding parallelism and these kinds of things, and also done a number of bug fixes with respect to complex border detection. And, you know, the net results on the other end is just a wider array of design files can be uploaded to our platform without need of any support from our Macrofab experts.
Yeah, I think y'all had Colin on the podcast earlier, right?
We had Colin on before he was an MFer.
Oh, that's hilarious. Yeah. So he's on our team now, and we turn him loose on a lot of the like file upload, because he is an electrical engineer? By
mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. Electrical engineer and just like
also a physics
genius.
Like,
and physics.
Yeah.
I can't box him in. I take me like, too long to list all of
I
those.
Would box him in as a polymath.
Just, yeah, that was episode 328, where Colin talked about, we called it Barry-based physics.
Mm. What really happens down on the quantum scale with electronics. And he basically told Parker and I how we were wrong about everything. So
I can relate to that experience.
Yes. Yeah. I basically have learned as a product manager just to give him, you know, free reign over our file imports. Say, what bugs you, Colin? And go, you go.
Just go do
just
it.
Just go. And then he'll be like, I've improved this part by, you know, 5x speed. And I'm like, that's...
That sounds too low.
Yeah.
You're not giving him enough credit.
No, it's just...
Well, I'm sandbagging. Okay. I promised myself I wouldn't come in here and overpromise our anyone product features and improvements. So I'm going to stick with 5X and hope that sounds good enough.
But yeah. Working with Colin is a humbling experience, to say the least. He's just... It's brilliant to see what he brings to the table on the platforms.
Yeah.
And we have some pretty exciting stuff coming up. I mean, even in the next few weeks. So. Nothing that you'll see, you know, just right away. Just some platform enhancements that are going to make the performance of the design view in particular, but really just platform-wide, some performance enhancements to the web page.
So I want to talk about this intelligent overage logic, because that implies that our logic before was stupid.
No, I mean, so, you know, part of, you know, our job is to, you know, give factories the enough parts. You know, these parts are tiny. Like, they lose some, you know, they need a little extra if it's a reeled product to load it in the feeders, you know, and they always ask us for more parts in case they, you know, lose something or, you know, have issues on the floor. And so, you know, and our customers, like, we don't want to charge them for more parts because, you know, I don't want to pay for more than you want.
I ordered 10. I want you to buy 10
and yes, put 10
yeah, exactly.
on boards.
I put 10 on the boards. Yes. Yep. And so we're, you know, we want to have as much of a balance as we can there. And part of that is, you know, For a while, we were saying, you know, small packages, we're going to use, you know, standard overage of 50 or, you know, for those really tiny, cheap resistors. You know, most of our customers don't care about that. We found, you know, some places in the middle where it's, you know, starting to get into your more expensive real parts. And we just started pulling in more variables, you know, into that calculation. We say, you know, okay, like, as a customer, you know, you want to not pay for a ton 50 overage if it's a, you know, a dollar part, because that can start to add up. And so we, you know, started just putting in more variables into that calculation, you know, trying to think of what does our factory really want, you know, and what can we be like hard on and be like, you know, hey, like, you're like, I know you want to run this through pick and place, but it's a, you know, $5 part, like, you're going to hand place it. And we're not going to charge for 100. So we've basically taken our overage calculations and just kind of added some more intelligence. When we say intelligence, it's more around like the margins of...
It's more if else loops now.
Yeah. Nicholas? Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we are comparing, you know, the cost of hand placement with the cost of the overage that the pick and place would want. And, you know, if we determine that you come out ahead with hand placement, we will go with the hand placement amount of overage, which is typically quite a bit smaller, right, by percentage. The overage also just scales neatly with the cost of the parts, and I mean, which is how it's always been. But this, yeah, the, as Kyle mentioned, the package overage is the main feature, the main headline function that we added last year, and then we've been iterating on that over the last year or two to add even more intelligence. And then the other piece of this puzzle is really the quality of the data that we're able to get, you know, whether we have those package identifications for parts that we haven't seen before in the platform. And so we are working this year on improving our part data sources. So we will be just enhancing the number of packages that we've identified so that we get more accurate overage calculated for your bomb, which, you know, is going to result in, you know, faster order processing and just better deal for the customer.
So does the platform indicate to the user, you know, here's your price for parts, but here's your overage? Does it tell you, oh, you're also purchasing an additional 5? Or does that just kind of get, I shouldn't say swept under the rug, or does it just kind of get combined in with all your other parts?
Yeah, we do it as, if you look at your BOM view, or even the components breakdown on the quote and order tab of your PCB, you'll see the overage. So we're very transparent about overage. We'll tell you if you're getting 50 overage, like, it's there on your BOM and on the quote and order page for you to see. So we're transparent about it. I don't think we'd break it out as a separate, like, line item summary for your order, but it's pretty easy to get at. I can tell you from receiving customer feedback, our customers know how much overage is costing them.
Yes.
Because yeah. I've gotten those emails, and I appreciate them, because it's, yeah, you know, oh yeah, that, whoops, like, that's a corner case that, you know, we can dig into a little bit more and enhance our calculation based upon.
Well, yeah, and that's just the thing. If you're going to manufacture something, we all know that it's going to, that overage is just a part of the equation. Mm-hmm. And one of the more difficult things, honestly, that I've experienced with CMs is trying to guess what their overage is. And I've certainly got it wrong before, where, you know, they wanted 100 extra parts and I bought them 80 or something like that.
Yeah.
And then there's a whole conversation around that. So it's nice to have it automated where you guys make the decision. I just give you the bomb and you tell me we need to buy this few extra. Now working in aerospace is kind of interesting, because sometimes, you know, if it's a 10-cent 0402 resistor, yeah, sure, buy 300 extra, I don't care, right? But, you know, just the other day I got some quotes for some transistors. They were $1,700 a piece, and they have a lead time of 32 weeks. So if one of them falls on the floor, I want you guys to tell me that it fell on the floor. Your overage is zero. I need you to place every single one of these, because I have to go to my boss and say, hey, we consume too many. So yeah, I don't know. It scales with the part, right? It all depends. But
you're
yeah, for
telling me that I'm gonna be like digging through the vacuum cleaner.
Yeah.
The bag. I want you to sweep the floor, put it in a bag, and send me everything you found.
Vacuum cleaners are allowed on the floor.
No, they shouldn't be. No, please don't do that. That was entirely a joke. Do not do that. So how about this customer furnished material option? I'm curious what that is in relation to.
Yeah, we used to, you know, as you were building out your BOM, make you designate, am I going to supply this from inventory? Am I going to consign it? And we found that, you know, our customers don't want to necessarily make that decision at that point. You don't want to be uploading your BOM and think, oh, do I have enough inventory to supply this part? You just want to build a BOM and then say, you know what, like, I'm going to supply, you know, this list of parts. And then after you order, that's really what, we don't need that information to place your order. We just need you to tell us which parts that you're going to buy, which parts that we're going to buy. And then, you know, after you place your order, you can go in and say, well, I've got these in inventory, take those from my inventory. I want to consign these parts, you know, I'll send them to you. So we basically have moved around some of the decision-making flows to where, like, we thought and got feedback that our customers, you know, wanted to make those decisions. So, you know, it's a lot of it was, you know, on the manufacturing side is, you know, similar. Like, we still, you know, let you pick inventory or consignment, let you, you know, have some flexible sourcing. We just moved a lot of the, you know, decision-making pieces to where it made the most sense.
Yeah, basically broke out sourcing is now separate from a bill of material.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, separate from the bill of material. And even, I mean, of course, the turnkey, you know, Macrofab buying your parts or you supplying them, decision you do need to make right up front. But, you know, whether you supply from inventory or consignment, you can wait days after your order to make that decision if you have a need to for any reason. The decision is fully after order placement happens, and we're already processing your order, reviewing it, sourcing the parts that you want us to source. So maximum flexibility.
So I guess that gives three different places where your components can come from, right? You can either have Macrofab go out and buy them. They can either come from an existing inventory that's there, or I could supply them to you, me being whatever the customer is. So that brings up a question. Let's say I did a run with Macrofab. I manufactured X amount of boards and parts returned to inventory. If I go and produce those boards again, I can pull from that inventory if there's excess parts, correct?
Yeah. If there's enough like inventory, like we don't typically store like overage in inventory,
stuff.
Because that's typically like just too hard to find. But if you have your, like, one of the benefits of storing inventory with us is you can do exactly what you said. You know, if you go to build with us and we, you know, don't use all the overage, or, you know, like you have a, you know, giant reel, we don't have to like, you know, lop off 50 parts every time we run that job to, you know, run the feeders through the machine. So yeah, we, customers do get the benefit of being able to put that back in inventory when they're done.
Yeah, I like that. I like that from a long lead time perspective. If you have parts that take forever to get, put those in inventory and then get your jelly bean resistors and caps closer to the actual build date.
Yeah, exactly.
So what about this complete, I actually know a lot about this because I worked on it. The completed board photo updates. Do you want me to talk about that?
Yeah.
I didn't do any of the back end or the customer facing, but I did all the back end work, I guess. So this is for QA, or quality assurance team. Mm-hmm. And it allows our quality assurance team to basically take photos, full resolution photos of the boards, and then securely uploads them through the ITAR controls to the platform. And so then you as a customer can view basically the first article that the QA team has approved. And so the whole initiative idea was to allow customers to see their boards faster. So we can, if there was an issue, let's say there was an issue assembling the boards, you can catch it faster before we ship them out to you.
Does the customer have the option to also approve before shipping based off that image?
Good idea. The problem with that is it would halt the line.
Oh yeah, that would gum up the mix like crazy. I'm just wondering if you guys had already tackled that.
No, that's something we've tossed around. It's just it halting the line. And
yeah, if you reply to that email, we will jump on that order and ASAP.
It gets jumped on really fast. The main thing is it prevents the back and forth of shipping everything.
Yeah. It's just a nice, I mean, you think of, I don't know, Amazon getting like the picture of your package on your door when it comes in. Just, you know, most of the time, I don't know if we've actually had any customers like jump in and say, hey, you did something wrong. But we've had a lot just really like that they can see their board, its progress, and just, you know, see that we're doing a good job. And just, you know, seeing the product, because it's not, again, not something that like a traditional CM is necessarily going to provide, you know, unless they're like unsure about how your board's being built. But we just do that on, you know, any board that comes through, because like we have the, you know, AOI machine taking photos. We have smart people who can get those photos into a database, and then we have smart people who can build workflows to put those in front of our customer. And so we're like, well, like, our customers would like this, let's like go build it and make it something that's a nice extra feature for them.
So I won't name the names, but we've already have other CMs copy that feature.
Is that right?
That it happened very fast.
What first came to mind was the Domino's pizza tracker, where, you know, like when you're at the end, it's, hey, your pizza's ready for pickup.
But what if
they don't send you a picture of your pizza, because I'd open it up and be like, yep, that's a pizza. Cool, thanks.
Right? No, I'd love to see that picture. why is it missing a pepperoni right there?
Yep, send it back.
Why doesn't it look like the ad copy?
True. Yeah, there you go. That's why they don't send you the picture.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a one point for PCBs. They do look like the ad copy.
Yeah. That was such a... The initial version of that uploader was a really... It's a really old Mirtec. It's called a Speed Demon Mirtec. It's before they were numbered Mirtec AOIs. And there's a Python script. And that AOI runs Windows XP.
Wait, was this the Mirtec that was there when I was there?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I remember this.
Yeah. And that thing's just been collecting dust forever since we got our new Mirtec 6s. And they didn't want me to start messing with the new ones because they were using them for all the runs. And so I'm like, oh, I can just use this old AOI to experiment on. And I think the most interesting thing was getting Python to run on Windows XP. Yet it's Python 2.6. Yeah, you can't run.
That is ancient.
You can't run.
Wait, but Python 2.6 is, what are we at now? 3.13
or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, 13, yeah. I don't even know. But 2.6 is so completely different than that. Like, are you still porting that over to the new Mirtec machines?
No, it was all rewritten for the newer machines. Okay. But it basically drove the mouse around to click on the Mirtec interface and then scan boards and stuff.
Nice.
And then to like safely transfer, it had its own local network that only like a Windows 10 machine could talk to it. And then the Windows 10 machine took that data and did the right things to make it go where it needed to go. But yeah, it's definitely was like, I'm so glad we could turn that off because it was definitely, a clutch. But I think because we had Brendan on, who's the engineering director on the podcast, and I had to show him how that thing worked when he started. Yeah, the newer machines have a lot higher resolution and everything like that. So, but yeah, that was my extent. It was like I did the groundwork on the floor. And then Kyle was just like, yeah, just point it to this location. Maybe it'll work. Oh, and then we had to make a tool so we can transfer the photos.
Yes, we have a very... Well, it's a very good, steady... No, it's not our most steady product. So if it goes down, product@macrofab.com if you're not getting your board photos. But...
Well, because the other tool I also wrote, but that's in JavaScript.
Yeah, we wrote a lot of...
There's a theme here. Me writing code and code tools not being good.
All right, so how about this PCB file view? What is new with that?
Yeah, I covered that a little bit. It is where you can see... So when we say PCB files, we just mean like the
this was the additional files,
right? This is the additional files, yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
gotcha. And exposing it to the... I guess it was always technically exposed to the customer, but you had to know if in the URL you could put... So if you're looking at your PCB, you could just put in /files, and it would navigate you there. Mm. There's actually a link now, and we exposed more files and also allowed more files to be uploaded.
Yeah, and you have a nice detailed view where you can see who uploaded this file, you know, when did I upload this... but you'd be surprised because we have, you know, our support team comes in and helps sometimes. So we want to make sure that we're like tracking all that stuff.
Yeah, that was absolutely the genesis of the view initially, right? And why we didn't initially show it to customers because we thought it was mainly useful for our internal support teams. But, you know, realizing that it does provide customer value and that we could add on this facility to upload some extra files that...
Yeah, and with ITAR, actually, we're like trying to figure out how we could transfer files, like you said, Stephen, with you know, sending encrypted keys and all that. And we were like, we already have a GovCloud S3 bucket here. Yep. What if we just made that a place where people could put their files? And that was actually like easier than us, you know, going and buying a subscription to a secure file transfer service or something like that. So.
Right.
Yeah, and fully integrated with our platform, so that you have one place to go to get it all.
Yeah, exactly.
So what's next? It's already April. we're full quarter, 3 months into 2024. What's down the horizon?
Yeah, I mean, we've been doing a lot of work on the PCB screen. You know, besides like the you know, ease of uploading files, like we just want to make that UI like really nice and clean, both for, you know, existing customers who are used to using MacroFab, but also for new customers who aren't really used to like working with a, you know, CM or platform that just takes their data and imports it. And, you know, a lot of them used to emailing back and forth and getting a little more, actually having to do a lot more like communication. And so we're trying to make that process feel a little more like natural for both new users and for existing users. So we've added some UI improvements so far, and we've got a lot more planned, a lot of stuff focused on your bill of materials. We know that, you know, for someone who had like a really clean, you know, BOM with all their parts selected, like it's a pretty nice experience. You know, if you're managing that BOM and keeping it up to date with, you know, parts that are, you know, still being manufactured, for instance, like you get a great BOM experience. But we've gotten like a lot of, you know, feedback that, you know, people who are like still building out their BOM, like we don't really help them like we could for people who, you know, aren't really wanting to, you know, make sure that all their components are still being manufactured or are highly available. We don't serve them as well as we'd like. So we're, you know, doing a lot of work on, you know, updating our part information and like pulling in just like as much part information as we can get, so that we can say, you know, maybe recommend, you know, all of your jelly beans for you if you can give us, you know, the values you're looking for. You know, provide some tools to help you build out that BOM, because that's like our, you know, our expertise is like we have all these parts, we know it's available, we know it's out there in the market, and we want to help people like who are, you know, like selecting passives. Like sometimes it's like that's not where we want designers to spend their time, I don't think. We haven't got feedback that.
How many times have you gone to Mouser DigiKey and went, I need a 0805 10K resistor? I don't care what it is. And you always sort by the cheapest price and if it is a reel of it or not.
Yeah. And so, like, we want to make that easy for, because we get a lot of people who just upload. I mean, everyone knows, like, what, you know, what capacitance value or what resistance value goes at that designator, but they just don't have a part selected. And so we're working on, you know, we want to be able to provide that for our designers in a way that like helps them spend time on the activities that are important and not have to like, you know, manually select part numbers for those materials. And then we want to help people just like with that information, you know, be able to like get feedback on their BOMs that's more like proactive, so that you don't have to think about, you know, oh, am I picking the right parts from a, you know, manufacturability perspective. You just have to think about, is this part have the right specs for my board? And we'll handle, you know, is it, you know, going to be end of life in a few years? We'll provide recommendations for how to replace that part. Or if it's, you know, has an availability risk, we'll provide that insight. And so those are a few of the things that we're working on right now. And then really just like our pricing and lead times, like, you know, we have, I think we provide a pretty good range of things that you can build on our platform. We have, you know, a pretty good selection of stack ups that you can automatically price, you know, compared to what's out there, but we want to get even better at, you know, automatically quoting more, a little bit more exotic PCBs, whether it's, you know, copper weights or, you know, layers or stack up thicknesses. We want to be able to give you, you know, better options for selecting pricing and lead times, I guess quantities and lead times. We still have to, you don't get to pick your prices. That would be interesting platform. But Yeah, quantities and lead times. And the way we'll do that is, you know, we are just using all of our quoting data. We have a ton of quoting data, and we've kind of relied on vendors in the past, and we're going to keep, you know, using like panel vendors that we feel are good quality panel vendors, but start to, you know, use some data and our, you know, whatever you would call it, AI or even just like data interpolation, just to build out a more intelligent pricing matrix that gives you, you know, more automated quotes.
And Excel best fit line.
Excel best fit line. Yes. It's, I've done a decent amount of the data stuff like that. And yeah, it'll be more than an Excel best fit line. It'll be, but I don't want to oversell her. I'm going to like,
yeah, I love the idea that there's intelligence behind it that goes beyond saying, hey, we've detected an issue. Like you were mentioning end of life kind of thing. That's, yeah, that's great when it says, okay, here's your part. We sense that it's end of life. I love the idea that there may also be, hey, it's end of life. Here's a suggested, or here's three other suggested. Maybe you can pick one, yeah, of these. Just make your life way easier, as you know, what was the word that was always used? Stiction, right? Just make it so that it's easy for people to use your platform, and by removing the friction and adding stiction, right?
That's, yes, that's another co-founder word.
Oh, great. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Nice. I've used that word before.
Yeah. Oh,
yes.
Also, completely randomly, something, I don't know why my brain came up with this. Maybe it's just ADD. It would be fun one day. You know, DigiKey and Mouser, they have, I don't know, a million different line items. It would be fun to know how many of those you have purchased. Not in quantity in terms of like how much money you've spent at DigiKey, but have you purchased 250,000 unique parts from DigiKey or Mouser or whatnot?
Yeah.
That'd be a fun statistic.
I bet you it's over that.
I bet you it's a lot. I bet you it's a ton.
Well, last year alone, we built 900,000 PCBs.
Right. Right. So what size of the catalog have you purchased?
Yeah. And I think each one, I think on average, it's 30 something line items per board.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, it's crazy.
We need to get some custom badges for that.
We'll probably know in a little bit.
Kyle's going to stay up really late doing some MySQL. Steven just stepped out, editor.
Should we talk about the improvements from February? Well, from March.
Oh yeah.
I don't know that we got into the details of just not requiring placements and the reorganization of the tabs.
Yeah, let's go and do that.
Specifications improvements.
We'll talk about that next. I think his headset died.
Oh dear.
You guys there?
Are you back, yep, in the land of the hearing?
Yeah, that hasn't happened in a hot minute.
Editor Steven is now back. Oh, and then we talked about all the releases in 23, but what about the last 3 months?
Yeah. I kind of mentioned the updates to the workflow, but editor, you can cut that out.
We're going to keep that in.
What's up?
It's okay.
Yeah, so in the last few months, we've made a lot of changes to the PCB screen. And one of those you'll notice is like our quote and order page, you know, now gives you different indicators. We wanted to split out our ready check. You know, what we call ready check is basically, is your PCB, you know, ready to order? If we gave it to our, you know, not quite ready to build, but ready for our order review team to check the design. And so it's usually, are your design files there and in good working order? Is your BOM complete? You know, can someone take a look at this and check if it's actually manufacturable? And previously we just gave you like a big red aggressive error that was just like, you can't order this board. And we found that to be a pretty bad experience. One, because it didn't really tell you why. And then also because we actually required some stuff that we don't really need to quote you on. And so like placement data is one of those things. Like we do need placement data to, you know, go ahead and build the board, but you don't actually need to have your placement data all sorted out or your Gerbers, you know, all sorted out to get a valid quote and place that order with a good price. Like, we can let you place that order and then we can go in with our support team and they can clean up your placement data and any, you know, missing files. And we've had a lot of orders go through this process and it's really quick and easy. Our support team's used to doing this. So they're like, you know, I usually like click on the alerts, you know, like an hour after they come up and they're already resolved because our placement or review team's already fixed it. And so we've started just requiring less data to be like in that perfect state for you to get a price and place that order. And then we've also just split out those warnings on quote and order to like really more of checks of, like, hey, like, you have design data, you know, do we give you a thumbs up on that? Or are you going to need to like get support to help you after you place your order? You've got a BOM. Do you have, you know, your parts defined? Are they MPNs that are like recognized by our market databases? Or is there some stuff in there that like we need to work on, like our communication of like, what does this part actually mean? And then, or is it like, or do you have a great BOM? It's just got some pieces of availability in there. And you know, and within that like window, oh, you've got availability issues. Like, here's the 6 parts that are missing availability. You can designate them as, you know, customer furnished material right there, and just you provide them, or you can, you know, go in your BOM and add those alternates yourself. Or if honestly, if you like know that it's a part that we're just not pulling for some reason from a source that you know of that, you know, isn't DigiKey or Mouser, you know, you can request sourcing help and just tell us like, hey, like, I'm trying to place an order for 100 PCBs. I've got these parts. Here's a link to them. Like, you guys just go quote these and we'll quote them. And, you know, I don't know. It's a pretty like quick quote turnaround. It's not a custom quote, you know, 3-day window. It's, we get Slack alerts. We go in there and we say, oh, you've got these parts. Let's go quote these and get your order taken care of. So we're just trying to make it like, and then we got that custom quote window still. If you have some custom quote specs, we'll tell you what's kind of blocking that, you know, automatic order and order now capability. So we've really just focused on, you know, it's a pretty big overhaul for our platform in that, you know, like not requiring placement data required us to do a lot of work. We did a lot of UI work to make that, you know, try to feel as smooth as possible. Even like when you start your board, like if you don't want to upload design files, like you can start from your specs quote and you can just tell us like how wide and long your board is, and we will build your quote from there. And then if you want to provide us files later, you can. So it was a big, you know, UI overhaul, but we think it gives us, you know, especially for those new users, like a really nice experience of, as you're designing your board, you can use MacroFab. You don't have to have it all figured out to take advantage of our, you know, quoting platform or our parts services. Like, you can use the platform to get quotes, you know, as you're working through those designs, rather than like having to have every Gerber layer figured out and all of your placement data in there and worked out.
Yeah, I'm really proud of the team's work on that UI overhaul. As Kyle mentioned, the centralization of showing you the errors and not making you fish around for, oh, I have to go somewhere else in the UI to fix this problem, you know, centralizing it into one space where you can kind of see it, and also just differentiating things that are not material to, you know, to you getting an accurate quote and placing an order, things that we can help you with after the fact, marking those clearly as warnings that aren't blocking you, and marking the things that do in fact block you from getting an accurate quote as, you need to fix this. This is a red warning. I find it makes the platform a lot more approachable to users who are not as initiated.
You know, it's really fun to hear all of this because it seems like MacroFab has certainly gotten to that level where the data can really help drive your decisions. And it sounds like there's a lot of really close attention to the fine detail of, what does it mean for it to click this button? What does it mean to display this information? What does it mean? And I remember a lot of discussions back at my time back at MacroFab that, you know, one day MacroFab would get to that point, and it's just really fun to see you guys there now and see you at that point where you get to turn those little knobs and see how that affects, well, the what is it? OE, the operation experience?
Maybe order experience.
Ordering experience, that's what it is. Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I'm a huge data nerd, SQL query guy, so I'm just, anytime I can dig into our, you know, I use it as an indicator for how we're doing, so it's fun to see. I mean, sometimes it's frightening to see where we are missing the mark, but it's fun to have that data and to, like, really try to attack some of those problems and you know, get to see, like, people using it and, you know, overcoming some of the challenges that they would have had, you know, a few months ago.
Yeah, it's a fun experience every day on the team. You know, we have a real fast development cycle. You know, we use agile development. We are, you know, pushing improvements to the platform multiple times a day in our microservices architecture, and you know, that is, those things are seamless to the user experience, and things just get better and better. You know, every couple of weeks, it's fun to see. It's fun to plan ahead and keep these guys busy, you know, building whatever Kyle dreams up.
Y'all have anything else? Or you want to wrap up the podcast? These two want to go hang out with the rest of the team. I'm actually keeping them from, like, their like, monthly hang out with the rest of the developers team, drink-a-thon, I guess.
Yeah, dreaming of drinking beers while we're sitting here drinking beers with you.
Yes, oh man.
Yeah, but it's with me, not with the rest of your team. So,
well, thank you so much for spending your evening with us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been a ton of fun. I mean, keep uploading your designs.
Yeah,
use the little red chat. It's way underrated.
Can we change
email me
that
at
icon?
product@macrofab.com. What would you like the icon to be, Parker?
Mac.
No, wait. Oh, Mac, the PCB guy?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
We have a...
unofficial mascot.
Unofficial mascot that's Clippy, right? The old Microsoft Word.
Mac has been on a t-shirt and some stickers, right?
About that, yeah.
He's kind of the love child of Clippy and Mickey Mouse.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could make that. Probably, it's probably...
That might need to be an Easter egg just for you.
Yeah.
Next up, I'm logged in.
I like that.
Yeah.
Unlock Mac the MacroFab.
Mac the PCB guy.
Maybe a secret preference in the user management page.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Nick, and thank you, Kyle, for coming on our podcast to talk about the software releases. Probably have y'all back on next year.
Yeah,
we'll look forward to it.
See if y'all have hit all those marks.
Yeah, I know.
You're gonna come here with a checklist. Yeah,
we haven't hit those by next year. I'll be probably not available for the podcast.
Thank you for listening to Circuit Break and Mock. Thank you for listening to Circuit Break, a MacroFab podcast. We are your hosts, Parker Dolman
and Stephen Craig.
Later, everyone.
Take it easy.
Thank you, Yes You Are Listener, for downloading our podcast. Tell your friends and coworkers about Circuit Break, the MacroFab podcast. If you have a cool idea, project, or topic, or a feature you want us to implement, let Steven and I and the community and Kyle know through our forums. It's form.macrofab.com, where we talk about personal projects, discussions about the podcast, engineering topics, and news about MacroFab. Form.macrofab.com.